Morning, Mr. Gershengorn.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. As part of a purported experiment to promote the objectives of Medicaid, the Secretary has, for the first time in the history of the Act, approved a combination of eligibility restrictions, penalty provisions, and benefit reductions that collectively will deny both health coverage and access to care to hundreds of thousands of Medicaid recipients. Judge Boasberg was correct to conclude that these approvals were arbitrary and capricious for at least three reasons, which I'd like to get out first. First, and most important, as Judge Edward noted, completely absent from the Secretary's analysis is any serious assessment of the massive impact on those who will lose coverage and be denied access to care as a result of these experiments. The purpose of Medicaid is to furnish medical assistance to those who are needy, and these experiments do precisely the opposite. Second, the analysis the Secretary did provide cannot carry the day. The Secretary invoked goals such as increasing upward mobility, reducing dependence on public assistance, and easing the transition to commercial coverage that are nowhere to be found in the Medicaid statute. And to the extent he sought to address other goals, such as improving health and cutting costs, he did so only by reducing medical assistance, not by furnishing it. And third, this was all part of an effort to transform and restructure Medicaid. That's what Kentucky said it was doing, that's what the administrator said she was doing, and that's what the secretary said he was doing when he approved cookie-cutter waivers that have effectively made work requirements available nationwide. But transforming and restructuring Medicaid to make it more like SNAP and TANF, or otherwise, is for Congress through legislation, not for the secretary through administrative action. So let me start with what Judge Edwards was pointing to, which of course is what Judge Boasberg was pointing to primarily, which is the failure of the government to address at all the stated goal of the act, which is to furnish assistance. The government, the secretary nowhere addressed in its opening January letter the effect on coverage loss, even though it was obvious from the face of the document, even though commenters suggested there would be massive coverage loss, even though Kentucky itself estimated coverage losses in the hundreds, approaching 100,000, which we think substantially underestimates. And by the time the final Kentucky approval happened, even though 20% of the recipients in Arkansas had been kicked off Medicaid as a result of the experiment. In those circumstances, to not address the coverage loss, which is the principal purpose of Medicaid, renders the secretary's approval arbitrary and capricious. It's simply a failure to address a substantial part of the problem under settled Medicaid law. Now, when the secretary was actually asked after Judge Boasberg's first opinion to address coverage loss, I'm sort of confused actually as to what the government's position is today as to Judge Sentell's blackmail question. When you look at what the secretary said about coverage loss as opposed to what the government is saying today, what the secretary said, and this is on page 12 of the approval letter, under the response to coverage loss, Kentucky has repeatedly made clear that its continued expansion of coverage, the ACA expansion population, is conditioned on implementation of this demonstration. It said it over and over. I don't want to bore the court, but if you look at that, like six or seven times, it points to the 450,000 people who would be denied coverage. That's the blackmail argument. That's the sustainability argument. That's what the secretary based the approval on when Judge Boasberg asked him to explain. Now, maybe the government is disavowing that, although I think you heard today that actually the sustainability of providing services to that expansion population is still at issue. So let me just address it briefly. That kind of blackmail theory cannot be a justification here. First of all, we disagree with the government that it's lawful. We don't ask this court to decide that now, but both as a matter of federal law and as a matter of Kentucky law, Kentucky statute it's cited in our brief says it's the policy of the Commonwealth to take advantage of all federal funds that may be available for medical assistance. And so it's not clear to us that it's lawful at all. But even setting that aside, there is, of course, no limiting principle to that. It's not just that there's an expansion population. Of course, Medicaid itself is voluntary. And so if you believe the government, all a state needs to do is say, well, we're going to drop out of Medicaid, and then anything that the state does increases coverage because it gets above zero.
What about their position today, which is more, I think, along the lines of, you know, we can't afford to do the expansion, to accept the expansion population if we don't belt tighten a lot.
Yeah.
And the way we've chosen to do that is to hasten people who can work into work for all kinds of reasons. you know, all kinds of policy reasons that are concordant with what's being done under PRORA, TANF, and, you know, we want people to be financially self-sufficient, and so that's a way that we are going to be able to afford our 10% and provide coverage for other people.
So I have a number of responses. So the first one, I think, goes back to the colloquy between Ms. Klein and Judge Santel. Just as a factual premise, and I think what she was saying is what we agree with, there is no attempt to condition the expansion population on this demonstration project. Kentucky has expanded. These people are getting coverage. It has been the coverage rate, the uninsured rate in Kentucky has dropped to 11%. These people, 450,000 people, are getting coverage. So this is not conditioned, but I understand that doesn't get to the core of Your Honor's question. So the core of Your Honor's question is, I think, there are two principal answers. First, that cutting costs by reducing coverage and is not an acceptable
Their view is we're not cutting costs by reducing coverage. We would be thrilled if 100% of people subject to these requirements complied with them. And some of them would graduate into jobs and eventually onto the, keeping their Medicaid coverage for a while they're in school, while they're in jobs that don't have, and then they graduate up. Some of the people will show that they don't have an obligation. They'd be thrilled if everybody did that.
So a couple of things. So first of all, just to step back before I answer Your Honor's question directly, what Judge Boasberg said, and picking up on Judge Edwards' point, that may be fine, but in implementing that, we don't think it's fine. But even if you thought that was fine, you can't implement that without considering the massive coverage loss that might result. And there is no consideration of that. That's a substantial part of the problem. But second, I do think, Your Honor, that a couple of responses are critical. First of all, as Your Honor pointed out, the passage in Walsh that the government relies on for this idea that somehow making things more cost efficient and improving beneficiaries' lives, it misses the real point in Walsh, which is at pages 664 and 665, as Your Honor quoted, that curtailing costs is not a sufficient basis for upholding the program if it's severely curtailed Medicaid recipients' access to the drugs there. This court said the same thing in the Farmer v. Thompson case, and of course that's the basis of the Ninth Circuit's decisions in Newton Nations and Beano, right? These kinds of issues have been addressed by the courts, and it's precisely to the contrary to the government. In fact, it's mystifying to me that they think Walsh helps them rather than hurts them. I guess I would also say, Your Honor, that to the extent the government is making an effort to let me step back. In addition to that, I think it really is a fundamental change in the way Medicaid is being given. What Medicaid is, from Congress's perspective, is it's a deal, right? Congress gives a huge chunk of money to the states. And in return, the states have to cover certain populations and provide certain floor of benefits. Now, there's a lot of flexibility, but Congress gives a floor. It's not up to the states to say, well, we'd like to cover some things and not other. We'd like to cover some people and not other. That kind of a la carte approach to Medicaid is not the deal that Congress has provided. I will also say that targeting this particular population, the ACA population, I think should give the court some pause. Remember, this is a population that the government is currently providing 93% of the money to. If this population were to be taken off, right, the health problems still remain and the costs still remain, and yet 93% of the funds to pay for that has disappeared. And so I think there's a real skepticism that one might have. And of course here the skepticism is very clear. There's a reason, not only should there be reason for skepticism, but actually the statements of the secretary and the governor and the administrator all make clear actually what's going on is that this is an effort to impose work requirements. And indeed, Ms. Klein was pretty candid about that today, right? What the government thinks it's doing is exactly what the government purported to do, in the program that was at issue in Aguayo. But Aguayo is a million miles from here, and Judge Friendly's opinion makes that clear. Of course, the purpose of AFDC was not to furnish medical assistance as here, but it was to attain or retain the capability for the maximum self-support and personal independence consistent with the maintenance of continuing parental care.
Judge Friendly, what about the resonant language in the Medicaid Act, which the Secretary points to, about improving people's independence.
Yeah, so I noticed that the government didn't mention that this morning, and I would say with pretty good reason. The actual sentence that Your Honor points to is 1396-1-2, says rehabilitation and other services to help families and individuals attain or retain capability for independence or self-care. It seems very clear to me, and Judge Boasberg agreed, that that's talking about sort of physical independence. It's rehabilitation services, self-care. It's not talking about support. And if I could just continue the Aguayo difference, because I think it's really critical. I mean, the government really is trying to blur SNAP and TANF and AFDC on the one hand and Medicaid on the other. What Judge Friendly said was not only is the purpose difference, but from the very beginning, from the 1930s, there were work training programs that were similar to the things that the government was doing. In the 60s, there was a work incentive program that had been put into AFDC. And he looked at the legislative history and saw the same thing. To me, so Judge Friendly said, these things are all in the act. They're the purpose of the act. Congress has enacted statutes that do it. It's precisely the opposite here. It seems to me that the analogy to Aguayo is the problem, not the solution.
What about the one provision that Ms. Klein mentioned, which does authorize states to, the exact language is something about the consistency yes. between TANF and SNAP, and if that one of the courses that a state can have is if it's cutting people for failure to work off yes. of those programs, it can also cut their Medicaid.
Right, 1396 U1B3. Yes, Your Honor. So that is the only provision that they say, and what that is a provision that says if you already are losing your public assistance benefits for failing to work under TANF, you can also lose your Medicaid benefits. But remember, that was enacted at the same time, and this goes to something Judge Santel was talking about, that was enacted at the same time as the work requirements were added to SNAP, and the purpose was changed. And yet, that was the very time that Congress decided not to add those to Medicaid. And so,
it's a categorical matter, but she's relying on that as support for the notion that it's not inconsistent with the Medicaid program to impose a work requirement or to terminate coverage for failure to comply with the work requirement. So why not? I mean, of course they shouldn't have to do it as a statutory matter without some regulatorily authorized demonstrations.
And our response to that, Your Honor, is that that provision cannot plausibly be read to completely and fundamentally change the purposes of Medicaid. That's the classic elephants in mouse holes kind of problem. When it was passed as part of a package where Congress knew expressly how to put in the language about making financial independence and work requirements part of the act, and Congress did that in related statutes, it seems to me a much more sensible interpretation of the acts as a whole to recognize this as a...
But I think all she's relying on it for is that it is a permissible purpose, not that Congress is directing one way or the other that it be done, and which leads me to a related question, which is what's your position on the level of deference to the Secretary in defining what the permissible purpose is?
So I guess I would say this, Your Honor. So I don't think it's fair to read that provision, which is a minor administrative provision that was put in at the same time Congress refused more broadly to change the purposes.
And has any state used that?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor. I don't know the answer. I'll see if I can find that out before. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I forgot the second part of your question.
Maybe deference to the Secretary.
Oh, the deference to the Secretary. Yes. So we think that the Secretary overall is really trying to fundamentally change the act in a critical way, and so we actually are dubious that overall the imposition of work requirements is something that would receive Chevron deference. Regardless of whether the deference would extend to what the purposes of the act are, we think is a closer question. I guess we come out with basically where Judge Boasberg was, which is to say that we think that promoting financial independence, upward mobility, getting people off public assistance is fundamentally not a purpose of Medicaid, and that it would, even if Chevron applied, it would violate Chevron at step one for the court
More fundamentally, you were saying that work requirement may or may not be permissible, in this context. But what Judge Boasberg said is, using administrative law principles, it can't be acceptable if you do not address coverage loss.
That is exactly correct, Your Honor. And so
we don't even have to get to the question of whether work requirements could be possible. So this is not about whether work requirements are absolutely impermissible. It's that you have put something in place without addressing the principal requirement of the statute, which is coverage.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And so regardless of what we, yes, it's the answer. It is a critical part of the problem, and Judge Boasberg recognized that. In direct response to Judge Pillar's question, which I agree you don't have to reach, we do think that promoting financial independence is not a goal of the Act. And with respect to health, improving health and cutting costs, we think Judge Boasberg had it right, which is to say that if your method, and this relates to Judge Edwards' point, if your method for doing so is by cutting coverage, not by adding to coverage and furnishing coverage, then that is not an acceptable means. In other words, Congress is able to specify not only the purposes and the goals, but also the means to the end.
So in your view, these sort of My Benefits accounts and premium-based incentives to exercise, to eat better, to do better preventative care with your diabetes or your, you know, smoking cessation, all of those sort of efforts to give incentives might be permissible, but that conditioning your eligibility for the program on whether you do or don't pursue those, I think, indisputably health-promoting objectives would be impermissible?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right, that conditioning it on benefits would make it impermissible. And indeed, does it go to Your Honor's earlier hypo about TV watching, and Judge Boasberg talked about broccoli and others, but actually the provision the government cites
again,
in the AC...
back to Judge Edwards' point, we don't have to decide whether they would be impermissible under all circumstances or...
Correct, Your Honor. I should premise all of my answers.
Judge Boasberg says that government is not justified in terms of the objectives.
Absolutely right, Your Honor. I should premise all of my answers. I'm getting questions. I want to answer them directly. But if I could put in an implied preview to a prologue to every answer, where I say you don't need to reach that because coverage is the focus of the Act, and as Judge Boasberg said, the government never wrestled with coverage at all. And with the exception of this blackmail theory, if I could have that as a standing objection, that's all the court needs to decide, this court really should decide here. If I could just finish the answer to Judge Pillard, the government points to 4108, which is this grant making in the ACA, which the government says, look, it promotes all this healthy behavior, but what's critical to us is 4108E, which says none of this can affect your eligibility for benefits or the level of benefits you receive. And so it's precisely, I think, reinforces our point that sure, health might be a part in some circumstances, but the Congress specified a means as well as an end. And just as Judge Boasberg said, that's what was going on with Congress. And Judge Boasberg pointed out, you know, the Joe and Dan hypothetical with the ACA. I think that really does go to the core of what was going on here.
Do you agree with, I mean, I'm gonna oversimplify, perhaps unfairly, his view, but that health is not a permissible aim of Medicare? Boasberg's conclusion that health itself, pursuit of health, qua health, is not a permissible aim of
Medicare. I think I would say that, correct, that health independent of coverage is not a critical aim. Again, with the hypothesis that you don't have to decide that.
There's nothing in that statute that says we're trying to help people be more healthy. It says we're trying to give people coverage for medical care.
Exactly. And that, I think that's what Judge, I know that's what, I think that's what Judge Boasberg was saying. We agree with that. It is health through a mechanism. And so the Secretary cannot say, I am looking to improve health by conditioning Medicaid eligibility on no television, on eating broccoli, on doing Pilates, or any of those other things that Congress was interested in furnishing coverage, and to say I want to improve health at the expense of coverage is, or you know, independent of coverage, is really not one of the purposes of the act at all.
And are you challenging the failure to have this demonstration evaluation in place, or what's your position on
that? So we have not independently raised that here. We do think that for a number of reasons, this isn't a legitimate experiment in any sort of way, shape, or form. You know, this is now effectively, it's available nationwide. There are, I think, 10 states that have gotten approvals and another 7 waiting in the wings. You know, there isn't the kind of rigor that you would expect, particularly, I know the court understands this, but you know, we're talking about real people losing real coverage with real health problems, and those are in the record and I think are obvious to all. And the idea that that this is an experiment without the kind of rigor at the front end that one would expect is concerning. But we have not, in candor, and Your Honor knows in our brief, that we have not independently identified that. We've rested and identified that as a freestanding, arbitrary, and capricious APA problem. We've relied on Judge Boasberg's approach. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Does Ms. Klein have rebuttal time?
Ms. Klein, do not have any rebuttal.
You may
have 1 minute.
You may have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Generous. I'd like to just start with Judge Edwards' question about where in the record the Secretary weighed the upside, the potential to increase coverage against the risk of coverage loss. So, for example, on the Kentucky Administrative Record, this is the decision document at 6731, the Secretary recognized that to create an effective incentive to take these actions, states may attach penalties for failure to take the measures. And this may mean beneficiaries who fail to comply will lose Medicaid coverage at least temporarily. However, the incentives included in the demonstration are not designed to encourage this result. Rather, they are intended to incorporate achievable conditions of continued coverage, and any loss of coverage that is the result of noncompliance must be weighed against the benefits Kentucky hopes to achieve through the demonstration project, including both improved health and independence of the beneficiaries who comply, and the Commonwealth's enhanced ability to stretch its Medicaid resources and maintain the fiscal sustainability of the program. And the evaluation, like, you want to know, like, how does the Secretary make that judgment, and why isn't it quantitative? It's qualitative. It's because, unlike in Benno versus Shalala, where the so-called work incentive was being placed on children, on persons found disabled within the meaning of the Social Security benefits, so unable to work, here the work incentives are being placed on a population that can be reasonably expected to succeed. So this is, because this is a demonstration, it is entirely permissible for the agency to look at the soundness of the design, at the qualitative measures, and it does not require it to be broken down in some quantitative fashion, which, honestly, if the agency had tried to do so, I think the other side would be saying that's speculative, to which we'd be saying, of course it's speculative, we haven't done it yet. So I just want to make sure, like, the suggestion that the agency did not weigh is inaccurate.
So as I was probing Mr. Gershengorn, you would agree with the notion that the Secretary would be thrilled if everybody complied, dearly hopes everyone will comply. Do you have tripwires or numbers of people cut off, or a time period where you're going to say, wait a minute, this is just beyond what we expected, and we can't have people not covered for this, you know, because it's monthly that you have to report. People are just not getting their act together.
Yes, both formally, the letters, the secretary routinely reserves the authority to basically say we're pulling back, we're changing our mind.
But I'm wondering about metrics. I'm wondering how realistic. I know it's a very political negotiating process between the federal government and the states. Are there lines that the states can't cross in coverage loss?
Again, in practice, if you look at the most recent, the Judge Boasberg's opinion in New Hampshire, what you will see is that New Hampshire, on its own, concerned that its outreach wasn't working, that it wasn't getting the reports, delayed any disenrollments. Remember, these are states that want to provide coverage to eligible people, because if they don't, you know, think about what happens. They just end up in the emergency room. It's much, much better for these people to have health insurance, whether it be from Medicaid or through the exchanges or employer. And these are states that have chosen to expand and are, you know, come January 1st, are going to have to pay 10% of the claims costs and are trying to just figure out what ways can we do it that are more economical, that are more sound. And you know, that's what boils down to is 1115 gives the secretary broad authority when, in his judgment, a demonstration will promote the purposes of the statute. And though Congress tinkered with that language when it amended it in the ACA, quite notably did not impose new substantive constraints. They're all transparency and reporting requirements.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank
Hall.
You.
Case is submitted.